Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Don't sweat the technique.
The Killer Bees are broadcasting live from inside the Mogul Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo. Now back to Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from a Highway Cantina. Perfect spot for a little Tex-Mex all the time in Edo. Perfect spot to hang out before the Strohs, before the Rockets, before the Dynamo and the Dash. Good margaritas, great fajitas, great chips and salsa. That's how you judge a Tex-Mex place. And Highway Cantina passes all. They check every single box. 713-780-ESPN. How about this, Tech? 8711. I think a spot is being soft and letting the players control the dugout.
I don't understand how they how do you say that? Because we see the fact that they've manipulated the batting order. We see the fact that, you know, I don't think that it's Altuve or one of the veterans. I think if they were manipulating the dugout, then Alex Bregman maybe wouldn't have been moved down. Maybe, you know, because he said in so many words, he didn't really like being moved down. He understood it and he went through it. From that reason, those kind of things alone, I don't think that's true.
0-9-4-4, I'm not throwing in the towel yet, but I'm not happy with the coaching staff. I feel Joe is picked to be a puppet. These guys needed butt-chewing, and I don't think Joe's got the cojones to do it. I actually don't disagree a whole lot with these last two takes. Really, like, I was
fine
with Joe's spot.
The dugout?
I would agree that a spot is soft.
Okay.
Do I think he's letting the players control the dugout? I mean, Frommer tried to call his own pitches in the fifth. Justin Verlander, like, told Yiner to go away. You know, Bregman was not, you know, he had those remarks after he moved down to the sixth spot. I'm happy that Chaz is back if he's 100%, but he didn't look like he was 100% to me yesterday. They could really use him on this team, but I feel like he needs to be 100%. I don't think that he was 100%, but that's also not in a spot to move. I think that that's probably a stretch, letting the players control the dugout, but I do agree with the Espada is soft and that he's not really a manager that is going to, you know, chew out the clubhouse. I think he's also shown that he's prone to a little bit of softness whenever he's out arguing with umpires or just chirping from the dugout on balls and strikes. I agree with that part where you don't really see that fire from Joe Espada. I haven't seen it at all, quite frankly.
We've talked about that as it relates to on the field. You've got to be able to. And sometimes, you know, back in the day, there's videos of Lasorda that used to say when he was managing the Dodgers, to light a fire under his team's rear end, he would go out there and he would tell the umpire while he was kicking dirt, throwing his hat, and making a big fit that I think you're doing a great job and I'm doing this because as my players see me looking like I'm ripping into you, they need something to motivate them. You need to see if there's a challengeable player, a play that you're not happy with an umpire. You need to see him go up and get in somebody's face and start getting a little bit more fired up. I'll agree with all of that. Yeah. I'll agree with the fact that maybe I'm not going to say he's tiptoeing or handling these guys with kid gloves, but because he is a rookie manager in his first year with a veteran-laden club, I'm sure that he's trying to pick his spots and understand, when do I go and actually have the one-on-one? When do I go in a team meeting and kind of lose it a little bit and throw some fire and some spit and some venom into the locker room to say, we got to pick it up, boys. We need an eye-opening moment. Maybe that's part of it, but I think right from the time he took the job, you had to expect that he wasn't going to be the perfect manager from day one. He was going to make some mistakes. He was going to be, you know, on the job training. And you didn't expect to be losing more than you were winning 50 games into the season, which factors in.
It's been I agree with that, and it's been a very frustrating season. My point is more, I haven't seen the fire at all. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's been so many moments with where the Astros are at right now that there should be some fire. Like, the one ejection, he's covering his mouth up, and it's, like, the most modest ejection that I've ever seen. Like, or even arguing the balls and strikes from the dugout. And I don't want him to be Aaron Boone, but look at Aaron Boone chirps from the dugout. And look how I haven't even seen Joe Espada chirp from the dugout. Like,
no.
Maybe the camera's not panning to him or something, but I haven't even seen Espada do that.
We were doing a remote, remember? And it was in Chicago.
Yeah, it was the only ejection.
Yeah, and we were like, what was that? Like, we had to ask, and they had to come back from break, and they had to try to explain, because it looked like anything but an ejection. We know Dusty didn't lose his temper often. He didn't get tossed very often. But when he did, there was no question he was going to get tossed, because he was emotional, because he was adamant, because he was going to make sure he got his money's worth. And at the same time, it probably was indirectly going to send a message to his squad. You don't see any of that with Joe Espada.
Like, what has been his most fireable moment? Like, not they're going to fire him, but where has he shown the most emotion? I can't think of a single time. Like, even Ronel Blanco got ejected from the game where he had the sticky stuff.
Right.
Like, even if you believe there's sticky stuff there, like, hey, all these guys are willing to wash their hands. You need to get in the face of the umpire. Like, even if you don't really believe it. Like, I've never seen fire from Espada, period.
I haven't
really,
at all.
I really haven't. Like, 713-780-3776. What is the most fire you've seen from Joe Espada? I don't see it. 8818. DeMeco grabbed a hold of the Texans team, and we can tell he vocally has a relationship with each player on his team. I cannot say I've ever seen Joe Espada vocally build his guys up. You wouldn't see that, though. Like, that's going to be in the clubhouse. He protects his guy with the media. Also, Joe Espada had way bigger shoes to fill. Like, yeah. DeMeco Ryans was coming off of David Culley and Lovie Smith, where Joe Espada is coming off a Hall of Fame manager. So, like, the shoes are much bigger for Joe. Not saying that Joe's as good a manager relative to baseball that DeMeco is relative to the NFL, because I wouldn't say that. I would have DeMeco higher than Joe Espada. But I do think that we probably underappreciated Dusty Baker, and we're starting to see a lot of shortcomings of maybe a mediocre manager, and we're like, huh, okay, these are all the things that we just didn't see from Dusty Baker that maybe we should have.
Also, and it's also magnified because you're seeing it at a time when everything's under the microscope because you're losing more than you're winning, and you're off to a slow start. And you're right in the fact that when Dusty picked his spots, he'd go off. But Dusty also had that lifetime experience as a player, as a manager, that he brought to the table that Espada doesn't have, that he's trying to establish. And so the one thing that I'm with you. I can't tell you and pinpoint one moment where I'd like to see him go off. I know that in baseball circles, the word got around pretty quickly about guys checking their hands, from Scherzer to Schmidt with the Yankees to the Dodgers situations to other guys, to where and Blanco was a guy that was, if he knew enough to show him his hands and say, check my hands, like, at that point when you're losing a starting pitcher at a time when you knew saving your arms was vital, you had to go off there. You had to say, not now, not with him, not because of the situation and because the precedent was different, but yet he just basically kind of just said, okay, said his piece to some degree. I'll go sit back down in my little chair now and do what I'm supposed to do. You can't have that, man. At a certain point, a message has to be sent to your ball club, to everybody involved, to say that you're not going to be walked over, because that'll be noticed and that'll be used against him.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying he's a bad manager. And honestly, I am cool with a cool, calm, chill manager in baseball, because it's a 162-game season. Like, I'm cool with it 90, 95% of the time. But there are certain moments, especially where you're struggling, like, if you have to fake a little fire, go fake a little fire. I've not seen Joe Espada, like, excitable at all.
Who's the Giants manager with all the tattoos that
Gabe
was
Kapler?
Kapler. Even in a situation, Kapler would be the guy that would start it, where you could see the fire in the dugout. Even if he's not Gabe Kapler, even if he's a guy that says, whether it's Fromber or somebody else, that something happens and he takes a guy down in the tunnel and he gives him a piece of his mind a little bit to say, this can't happen on this ball club in that situation. You can't let your teammates down. It'll trickle out to the media that said, hey, Joe had some words to say. He was right. I understand it. I'm good. We don't even hear that.
Yeah, I don't know if I want him to be Kapler. Like, I don't want him to be that extreme.
But that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying you don't want it to even if you don't, the cameras don't pick it up, and we see him being emotional, we would at least find out about the fact that after the start, Joe Espada came and got Fromber as soon as he came out of the game. They were in the tunnel, and Fromber would say, yeah, Joe Espada, he came at me. He let me know, and he's right. That's why I was wrong. You don't hear any of that. You don't hear Espada being that guy doing those things.
1509, Espada is nice, like that former Rockets coach Silas. Jeff Bannister should have been the guy. I was rooting for Bannister. Now, I'm not willing to, like, hindsight 2020 this yet, though, and say Espada should not have been the hire. I don't think we've seen quite enough of it. Espada never had the experience doing this in the first place other than bench coach to Baker. What was his resume? I'm not sure what everyone expected. Well, that he was the,
he's the internal guy.
And he was the bench coach to the golden era of Houston Astro baseball.
Yep.
Like, he definitely deserves a job in Major League Baseball. You could argue, well, it shouldn't be a rookie manager with a veteran team. I'll hear that. But Joe Espada should absolutely be one of the 30 managers in baseball. 3451, Joe Espada shows about as much fire as you guys show in the Astros sucking. So this is where the Texans are at right now. right now. Either they want, you know, fire and brimstone with the Astros, or people are saying, calm down, it's May 22nd. So you have both extremes, and you have very little in the middle right now. It's funny. It's a very active text line today.
And again, when things go wrong, there are everybody's looking to put the crosshairs on somebody. And the fact is that we need to be putting more crosshairs on the guys that are responsible for playing the game on the field, for the guys that have been coming up short across the board, offense with runners in scoring position, Alex Bregman, Payne, and we already know Abreu, from the pitching staff, from the Hunter Browns and the Arrigetti to some degree, but the other pitchers that had Javier, the guy Fromber lately, the guys that haven't done their jobs. It's great that everybody wants to play the blame game and point the finger at somebody, but it starts with the guys on the field that are responsible and paid to do their jobs that aren't doing their jobs right now.
713-780-ESPN. If Doobie doesn't try to push it to third base with no outs, when Meyer scored, probably comes home and ties the ball game up. That is true, and that's an example to you. Hey, let's make some good plays. Even the two losses prior to today, they were very winnable games. Like the Verlander, he went rogue on his own. He gave up that home run to William Contreras. You should have won that game, I think. And then, of course, you should have won Monday when Fromber went nuts. Mm-hmm. We're definitely running on credit with the Astros at this point. There's no way to back this team if they didn't have the recent history, but I'm still on board. Okay. I mean, we've seen glimpses of this team rattling off some wins. I think the Astros have been pretty good for, like, the last 3 weeks. And then the pushback on that, well, they played poor competition. Yeah, I mean, that is true.
Good teams are supposed to beat bad teams. This is a thing you're talking about. This is why it's glass half full, glass half empty about you went 7-3 on the homestand. You were beating teams you were supposed to beat and beat a good Milwaukee Brewers team. But on the flip side, the people that are looking for the glass half empty are saying, you lost a series to the Angels. You lost games you shouldn't. Okay, you can go either way, but the fact is they were 7-3. Good teams have a really hard time winning 7 out of 10, let alone the winning streak where they have 6 or 7 in a row and 7 out of 8, to where they can – if you stack and rack wins like that, you're a better baseball team than and you should be doing those things.
3-6-6-7, so you'd put Espada with a ready-made championship team. I think that's where the argument is. Like, I think you have a point when you say that this team didn't need a rookie manager, they needed a veteran manager. I can hear you on that. But I do think Joe Espada should have a managerial job in baseball. 4-0-7-1, didn't the Nationals have a really bad start to their World Series championship against us? I believe that they did have a poor start that year. The Phillies probably had a worse start the year that they lost the World Series to the Astros. They even fired their manager. They fired Girardi and went to Thompson. But Girardi had been there a few years. They're not firing Espada. Omega Man and Humble, I just want Branham to tug me in at night. I'm not really sure what that means, but I'm happy to do it, Omega Man and Humble. My old
stomping grounds. Let me know how that goes. Can you put that on TikTok?
I can, yeah. I'd be happy to. That might go viral.
You can be more than an influencer when you tuck him in.
Yeah, he'd have to pay me a pretty penny for that, I think so. 713-780-ESPN. The Rockets are interested in who? Kelly Eco had a report on the Rockets yesterday with some interesting names that might be in the Rockets' plans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
They just brought us out some taquitos that are bomb. Chicken taquito, I think the other one's barbacoa. Mm. Really good, little avocado, some sauces sprinkled on the top. Delicious. Delicious food here at Highway Cantina. Delicious drink, too. And we'll get to the Kelly Eco report in a moment about who the Rockets are interested in bringing in, some free agents they might have their eye on, their own players that they're expected to bring back. Final thought on the Astros, though. 3-4-5-1. Take out the Astros history and just go on eye test. Call me crazy, but I actually think this team's pretty good. Like, you have Yiner hasn't given you a whole lot behind the dish, but Caratini's been solid. You're above average in WAR at the catcher position. First base has been bad, but it's much improved. Altuve's still one of the better offensive second basemen in the game. Jeremy Peña's coming around. Bregman's been awful, but you hope that he picks it up. And then you have one of the better outfields because Jake Meyer has been red hot. Kyle Tucker's been maybe the best offensive player in baseball. And then, you know, Yordan's your DH.
The platoon.
Whoever you're playing in left field, Loprofito's been pretty good. I really like Chaz against left-handed pitching, against righties. Maybe we see more Loprofito. And I also think that the rotation's kind of figuring itself out. Didn't love what I saw from Fromber and Verlander, but I still believe in Fromber and Verlander. And then the bullpen has been fantastic for the last 3 to 4 weeks. So I'm still pretty high on this team, actually.
I've been banging the drum on this roster is too good for people to throw the towel in and just basically throw this season away and just give up hope. And it's for this homestand alone. It's for that very reason. It's for winning all those games in a row as part of the end of the road trip and into this homestand, to where you say all the things that you said on top of that and go, look, there's just too much talent on this team in a division that's too winnable for you to give up hope on this team. It doesn't matter who they're playing at this point, because it matters how they're playing more than anything else. And they're starting to play a brand of baseball that is totally different than what we saw the first month of the season, when it was unbearable to watch, when the mistakes were adding up at the most inopportune times, when they were creating new ways to lose. Now you're looking at a team that is the best, by average, the best hitting baseball team in the American League, in baseball. Yeah, they're not hitting with runners in scoring position, but that, with the law of averages and everything that goes with it, says if you're the best hitting team for average in baseball, that should change. You're getting healthier. You're, like you said, the pitching staff is figuring itself out. And you can't complain about the guys that we were really concerned with at the start of the year in the middle of the bullpen. And the back end of the bullpen seems to be a whole hell of a lot better. There's just too many things to be positive about to think that this team's going to figure it out, to be on the flip side of that and say, I'm done with them, it's over, they got no shot.
Kelly Eco, your boy, knows your name, doesn't know mine. He reported that the Rockets have been monitoring the situation in Cleveland with Donovan Mitchell, that they have interest in Donovan Mitchell. Of course, he didn't sign the extension with Cleveland. There's a lot of thought that Donovan Mitchell might be the hottest name on the trade market this offseason. Ingram from New Orleans is another name. Bridges from Brooklyn is another name that are trade options, maybe not for the Rockets, but that have been floated around as some players that are good that could be available via trade. But specifically, Kelly Eco saying the Rockets have had interest in Donovan Mitchell. They're evaluating the situation. How down for Donovan Mitchell are you?
He's looking for a big extension. He's looking, the more I looked into this, and he's looking to be extended at 60-plus a year. And at his age, it always price matters. Like, what are you having to give up to get him? Because it looks like Cleveland's on the verge of blowing it all up. There's rumors out there they're shopping Garland as well. There's rumors out there that Allen is not going to be their center next year, that they're even willing to part with him, or he's going to go somewhere else. The fact that you – and J.B. Bickerstaff's on the hot seat with a guy that has consistently won more every year he's been in Cleveland. I don't know what they're doing, but no matter what they're doing, the Lakers want Donovan Mitchell. The Sixers want Donovan Mitchell. There are teams that are, like, on the cusp of a championship that are looking for him to be that last piece, that make way more sense, that are probably more desperate to give up more to get him.
Huh.
Okay. I think that in the short term, I think that if you weren't looking at a $60 million extension – I think that depending on what you have to give up for him, if it's I'm not going to say it's minimal, but at least you're not giving up a ton of these young players. I could see for 2 or 3 years him being a guy that could get you – you and I had this conversation a week ago.
Yeah.
I think that they would be a playoff team. I think that they could get to the second round of the playoffs at a certain point before he left Houston. But I don't know that how much he's got left in the tank. He's been dinged up. $60 million is a lot of money, and you're already overpaying for Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet. To where there's got to be other guys out there, because I got a name I'm going to throw at you as well.
See, I'm with you on Mitchell. You know this, because Mitchell, like, if you're making this big splash, it needs to be a guy that you think you have championship aspirations with. I don't think that you do with Donovan Mitchell. Now, you know, you mentioned a lot of those teams. I think the Rockets have better assets than those other teams. So on one side, I think the Rockets would be of the most interest for Cleveland. But at the same time, we've seen how much stars can drive where they go nowadays, where I would, you know, kind of back you up on, well, Donovan Mitchell might demand to go to one of those other teams that you mentioned and not be willing to do business if you were to trade him to Houston. So it's kind of two-pronged. I think on one hand, the Rockets have the best assets, but on the other hand, are they in a position where they're, like, ready to be a championship team as soon as Donovan Mitchell comes into play, and Donovan Mitchell might demand that?
So this is a kind of going – this could go back to the conversation we had a week ago, too, because you were about this team has to give the team a chance to win a championship.
That's my goal as a GM, right. Yes.
And my way of thinking was, well, if you're not going to win a championship in the next 3 years, then at least with Donovan Mitchell, Fred VanVleet, and Dylan Brooks, and the guys that you still have in this roster, you're a better team, you're more competitive in the league, and possibly in the playoffs for those 3 years.
Yeah, I agree.
If those three contracts expire at the same time, now, whether it's those guys that lead you to a championship or not, they got you more wins and more success and probably more popularity with your fan base than you would have had. And now you have a ton of money and or tradable contracts with guys that other teams are going to want because they're expiring, to where you can reset with the veterans and then chase the chip. So it's interesting to me from the standpoint of you could probably improve in the short term. But I think the market is going to be extremely high for the teams that are desperate. Daryl Morey's desperate in Philly. LeBron is desperate in L.A. The Clippers, depending on what they do, when they're shopping their guys, when they're figuring out Harden, it's Paul George or Kawhi guys they're going to keep or get rid of, and they're going into a new arena. These are the teams that are going to be desperate. I don't think the Rockets should be desperate at any time.
Agree. And I think what sometimes that like everybody does not factor in is what is the demand of the player. Because a lot of times these players can demand where they go. And does Donovan Mitchell demand to go to, you know, one of those teams that's going to be on the cusp of a championship? Or to the Rockets where they're maybe a second round Western Conference semifinal in 2 years? You mentioned the three players that are expiring. Did you mean Mitchell, Jalen, and Alpi?
No, I meant by the time their contracts were over.
Which players though?
Fred VanVleet, Dylan
Brooks.
Oh,
okay, the veterans.
And if you had traded for a guy like him, then Mitchell and those other guys could expire at the same time.
Okay.
Then you got a boatload of cash.
I see what you're saying. Because Mitchell expires after next year.
Right.
Jalen and Alpi do. So I was curious if that was the route you were going. Because all three of those guys, and you would assume that Jalen would be in a Donovan Mitchell trade though.
Right. I think that he'd probably be the centerpiece going the other way.
All right, so who's the name that
Michael Porter Jr.
What's going on over there?
The air conditioning keeps dripping on me. Does Michael Porter Jr.
spider on your shoulder.
Does Michael Porter Jr. move the needle for you more so than a Bridges or some of the other guys? Because Michael Porter Jr.
More than Bridges, yeah. I'm not a big Bridges guy.
I'm not either.
I think he's solid, but I'm not giving up, like, you know, the moon for him.
I think Michael Porter Jr. in the right system, because I think as much as when you look at what he's become, people look at a contract first, right? But he's going to be more limited in what he's been able to do because he's playing with the Joker and he's playing with Murray and he's playing with other guys, even Gordon. If you get him out of that situation, he's a really good three-point shooter. He is athletic. He has size. He can defend. He has length. He's a guy that intrigues me depending on the price because Denver knows what they just went up against and they know they got to do something to stay competitive at the top of the West. And if they're willing to move a guy like that, because Gordon doesn't do anything for me, if you look at a Michael Porter Jr. and you throw him in because he's still young, you throw him in with some of the young guys you're able to keep if Jalen's a centerpiece or whoever goes in part of that deal, I think that would be intriguing.
I guess I would need – like, I like him as the player. He is expensive. I didn't realize he had
this
big deal.
Yeah, he got a big deal.
So he his cap hit next year is 36. He's 38 the year after, 41 the
still
year
not
after that.
Bad, because I think he could be more productive in a different system.
I guess I would need to know what I'm giving up.
That's a key thing because – what does Denver want? I don't think Denver wants a ton of youth.
No.
Denver needs another guy or two that can step up and step in. If it's Fred VanVleet as part of that deal, go ahead.
Yeah, I like the name. I don't know if they're great trade partners, though. Because I don't know what Denver would be that interested in with the Rockets.
Like, do you put Fred at the one, Murray at the two, Gordon at the four,
I think they
Joker
could play
at
together.
The five, and then you can figure out different threes.
But is Fred VanVleet enough of an upgrade over Michael Porter that it increases their championship chances? I don't think so.
I think he makes them a better team.
Yeah, I'm interested in the player. That would be now he is.
Yeah, that's a guy that I think would fit into the Rocket system, I think.
Eco also reports that the Rockets are interested in Malik Beasley.
Mm.
He's a good shooter.
He's a good shooter.
Really good shooter. He shot over 40% from three last year. And, again, this is probably a move where he's a filler on your bench. You're not going to have to give up a whole lot or spend a whole lot to bring him in.
Well, what did you and I talk about? At a certain point, whether it's the draft or otherwise, with the guys you have, now you got to start filling niche holes in your team. Yeah. You need better shooting no matter what. Whether you're looking at drafting a Shepherd in the draft because you need a three-point shooter, or you're going to find guys that are out there that are affordable three-point shooters, they need better shooting, period. And I watched a lot of his games last year, obviously playing in Milwaukee. He's a guy that shoots the three well, that he can shoot it contested. He can shoot the wide-open threes. He knocks down a pretty good percentage. He'd make you a better team. He's like a younger, more in his prime Bullock, where he could help you. That I think that at the right price, that's a good ad for that team.
Yeah, see, they're not saying he's going to be expensive either. They say they could use a portion of the MTE, so not even all of it.
Okay.
So if he's somebody that can be a backup, 2-3, how's his defense?
Oh, good.
He's a good defender, so he'd be a good 3-and-D guy.
The big thing with him is that he doesn't have the height, but they like to use him. They use him all over the place guarding the other team's best player because he can get up on you and he can play defense.
So 3-and-D.
Yep.
He'd be your 3-and-D off the bench. He'd be a better version of what Bullock was supposed to be, which currently you're probably playing Easton at the 4 a lot if you were to do that, which I'm okay with playing Easton
fine
at the 4
too.
A lot. Who are your current backup wings? Do Cam Whitmore?
Cam's
got
to continue
more of a creator, though.
He's got to continue to understand the defensive side of the ball and be a little less selfish when he gets the ball. But I think that you can develop him.
And then the other names that Eco mentioned as guys internally that they're going to keep in, they're expected to pick up the options on Jayshon Tate, Jeff Green, and Jock Landale, all three.
Yeah, I mean, look, with Steven Adams, I don't know how much time Landale's going to get, but we know Steven Adams can get hurt too, and he also could be a piece that you could a veteran team might be after to where you have insurance, so I'm fine with that. The guy you know that I don't really want, but I think that he might be a trade chip that other teams want, is going to be Tate. Yeah. I think Tate's a guy that probably is better suited somewhere else because you saw his minutes diminish greatly at the end of the season and also sitting out games in street clothes because they wanted to just keep playing the young guys. He's not in their long-term plans. Teams like Miami and teams that look for a veteran kind of guy to fit in with their mix, they would want to have a guy like that on their team.
Yeah, and none of those guys are really going to impact what you can do in free agency. Like, you're not going to be able to go spend big money on a free agent because you spent a lot of money last year. You really only have the MTE to spend this offseason, and picking up the options on those three guys isn't going to impact that. And then you also have these salaries that are, you know, they're non-guarantees. You can get out of Jayshon Tate's contract now. You can do it next year. Jeff Green, same thing. Jock Landale, same thing. So it becomes not even like an asset in terms of a team wanting the asset, but it can match salaries in case you have a move. And it's good to have that flexibility to be able to make that move if you need to match those salaries. I think it's more financial than it is actual, these guys are going to be in our rotation.
I think the reason why you would bring back a Tate and even a Landale is because those contracts will mean something in a trade as well, where whether they're throw-ins or not, sometimes that's a difference between being able to execute a trade and not,
yep,
whether they're playing for you or not.
713-780-ESPN. Amen Thompson was named All-Rookie Second Team yesterday. What is the ceiling for Amen Thompson going forward? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. I know you've been thinking about turf for your yard. You've been thinking about it every single time that you mow the grass. You've been thinking about it every single time that it rains and it's muddy and you have to let the dogs out. You've been thinking about it every time the kids come in dirty and they mess up the rug or the tile or the carpet. You've been thinking about turf for your yard for a long time. Maybe it's the mowing thing. Maybe it's the kids. Maybe it's the pet. Whatever your reason, maybe just to get your weekends back. I know you've been thinking about it. And if you've been thinking about it, you need to reach out to Cinlawn. Why not? Cinlawn will give you a free consultation, free estimate, and then you can decide. But at least know your options. Cinlawn's the greenest turf company, not just in color, but also in theory. Cinlawn's product is the best in the game. Top-of-the-line products that are made in the USA, lifetime warranty, in-house crew, so you don't have to worry about the nightmares of a job that's contracted out. We've all been there. Those are all nightmares. Cinlawn, you're not going to have to worry about that. Fully insured, fully bonded, the customer service elite. Cinlawn controls the process from yarn to yard. Cinlawn created the industry. They're the sister company to the AstroTurf, which, of course, you know, is the stuff in the AstroDome. Cinlawn has nearly two decades in the game, the only turf company in Texas that can say that. Go to 975cinlawn.com to learn more, 975synlawn.com, 975synlawn.com to improve your yard today. Cinlawn, artificial grass never looked more natural.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
4776. My interest would be Allen, not Mitchell. I feel about that.
I like Jared. Jared Allen has paid a lot of money, but I like Jared Allen. I think that Jared Allen is the defensive kind of center we were talking about. I just think he's paid too much. When you look at a guy that is not what Alpe brings to the table skill set wise, we talked about it even with a Jalen Duren. Get a guy that can come in off your bench, or like when you talk about Udoka and the kind of players he's looking for, a guy like he had in Robert Williams. Doesn't have to score the ball a lot because you got a lot of those guys. But a guy that blocks shots, rebounds, athletic, strong, can play defense, can do the kind of dirty work that you need a big man to do. I like Jalen Duren. I think he brings a lot of that to the table, and he fits the same age group that you got on the roster. Jared Allen, to me now, I don't think he's as good a fit as maybe he was when the trade was made. And I think because he also makes a lot of money, I'm not sure I want to go that route.
Yeah, I like his talent. I would like that type of player on this team, but I'm not going to pay for what his role is going to be, because he's probably your backup five.
Yep.
I mean, he's backing up Alpe's, your defensive specialist, your rim protector, that's playing at most 20 minutes a game, maybe critical stretches where you need to stop at the end. The contract is why I'd be out on that. There was a trade rumor, not a rumor, I guess just a thought from Bleacher Report.
Yep.
They had this, and I'm curious if you'd make this trade. You trade the third pick, Jayshon Tate and Jock Landale, to Memphis for Marcus Smart in pick number 9. How do you feel about Marcus Smart?
I'm thinking first of what you're giving up. So essentially you're giving up Tate, which I want him to do.
You're just giving up two contracts, really, because neither one's going to be in your you're too deep.
I think you, well, from a standpoint of whether I like it or not, I know our head coach would love it.
Yeah.
Because he loves Marcus Smart. He loves the intangibles. Marcus Smart's the guy that was always, when it was Jaylen Brown and it was Tatum and they were shooting too much or they were doing anything that was pissing the rest of the team off, Marcus Smart was the guy that came in and basically told them how it was going to be and put his foot down. He's a locker room leader. He's a defensive dog where he just gets up in on your face, and he doesn't take crap from anybody. But I wonder at this point in his career what he's got left in the tank. You know, I know that Memphis was going young last year, and that's why he didn't play.
Yeah.
But I do wonder how many more years he's got, like the old vintage Marcus Smart. Moving from 3 to 9 doesn't do anything bad for me. I think that's fine. I don't even know if I want 9 back. I might try and shop that again. But I think if all I'm giving up is Landale, and I know I have Steven Adams, and I'm giving up Tate, but I'm getting a Tari Eason back, if it's basically a pick swap to get Marcus Smart on my team, I'm not opposed to that.
I just don't know how Smart fits. Like, he's your backup point guard, right? Like, he'd be your backup point guard. Maybe you can play Fred VanVleet and him together.
He shoots the three well enough that he can back up both spots.
That'd be a small-ish lineup. He wasn't that good from three this year, but like you said, he didn't play a whole lot. Right. Only played 20 games. He also makes a ton of money, but it would be, I mean, he's still got two years, $20 million next year, $21.5 million the year after that. That's a lot to be paying your backup guard.
It is, but though they would expire and coincide with the other two guys you're paying a lot of money to. They would coincide at the exact same time as VanVleet and Brooks. Then that doesn't bother me as much.
Yeah, that would be I don't know if you're really adding a whole lot to the team there, but you mentioned, like, the locker room stuff, the defense. I'm probably out on that because I think that there's other moves you can make that are a little bit better. Amen Thompson won the he was named to the All-Rookie Second Team. What is the ceiling for Amen Thompson going forward for the Rockets?
I don't know that we have a ceiling for Amen Thompson going forward for the Houston Rockets. I think that it's unrealistic to think that he's going to be like a bona fide scoring machine superstar. But I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that this is a guy that can do a whole bunch of things really, really well and being a very much above average player in this league that might be an all-star at time or two, that might be able, you know, to get on a couple of these kind of teams as he goes forward, from all defensive team to, you know, other recognition that he's going to get. I think that he has a massive upside. His shooting is obviously going to be the first question that people have and how much that he can improve on that. But other than that, the tools are there. He's a good ball handler. It's going to get better. His passing and the way he sees the floor is really good. And when you start talking about his ability to defend multiple positions, how long he is and how many offensive rebounds he gets and how he rebounds and finishes on the break, I think that he has got a massive upside to where I think the only thing that I would feel comfortable saying right now, and not real comfortable, that he won't be a superstar.
Yeah.
But other than that, I think the sky's the limit for the kid.
See, I think he could be a very poor man's Russell Westbrook, like kind of a different build, but, you know, getting you flirting with triple-doubles, doesn't shoot it all that well. Or I think he could be a healthier version of Ben Simmons, where, like, he's not going to be a – why is that bad? Ben Simmons, who tries and isn't injured, is a good basketball player.
Right, but that's the thing. That's what gets me.
Yeah, so he's not injured.
I don't like the whole Ben Simmons doesn't play. Ben Simmons sits out with an injury that's lasted for 3 years. You know, all the other things. Ben Simmons coming out of college had a ton of skill, too. You're right. I'll go that route. And I think that he already shoots the ball better than Ben Simmons, form-wise and otherwise. I think Ben Simmons' form coming out, and it still hasn't been great.
They're both very bad. Pick your poison. Like, yeah. They're both not good shooters. Hopefully Amen can develop one, because, like, maybe he has a work ethic and Ben Simmons did not. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that I would take to whatever Ben Simmons does for his career, I think I would take the career shooting of Amen Thompson over whatever Ben Simmons does. But I don't know if we're arguing about that much of a difference in terms of the overall effectiveness.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the player. I'm not talking about desire. And it seems like Amen Thompson really loves basketball. Like, just his year in Houston, it feels like he has, like, a good head on his shoulders when it comes to basketball and basketball IQ. I think he's a really good passer. I think he could be – and I think Ben Simmons has more upside coming out of college than Amen Thompson does. Like, they were talking about Ben Simmons being one of the faces of the NBA, like being a top-five player at his absolute best. best. I don't think Amin Thompson's a top five player at his. Yeah, I don't think Amin Thompson's at his like a top five player at his absolute best. But I guess, like you said, I think he could be a couple time All Star, 2-3 time All Star at his absolute best. But his skill set's similar. Like, not great shooters. They're both really good passers. They can rebound. They can finish at the rim. They can defend when they want to. Ben Simmons' problem was more he's soft and he doesn't have any desire. If Amin Thompson can be Ben Simmons but not be soft and have desire and not have the injury proneness, I would sign up for that quickly, immediately.
Yeah, no, look, I think that when you talked about who loves the game, I don't know if Ben Simmons loves the game, but I sure know that when you hear stories about the Thompson twins and the fact that when their gym was shut down to redo the flooring, that they had to be basically forced off the blacktop because they didn't want to stop working out and working on their game and trying to hone their skills. That tells you that they're gym rats, that they love the game. And that means something in today's professional sports, and especially in basketball.
3-4-2-6, they were saying Ben Simmons was the next LeBron with the size and passing ability. Yeah, that one, that's a bad take, a really bad take in hindsight. But again, Ben Simmons, like, he did not have the heart. Like, he does, his spirit's not there. And then, yes, he's had some bad luck with injuries, depending on how much we want to believe it. 8-0-8-9, Ben Simmons, all-time bust, first overall. I mean, he got paid, though. Like, there's been a lot of number one picks that had never got paid. Like, who was the guy out of UNLV?
Oh,
I think he was a Rocket at one point.
He was. They brought him in.
They thought his vision was messed up.
AB. His initials are AB. Anthony Bennett.
Anthony Bennett. Yeah, he was the number one pick. Like, that's a big bust.
Massive bust.
Greg Oden.
Kwame Brown.
Did Greg Oden ever get paid?
Greg Oden got paid by Portland.
He got paid before he got hurt.
Yep.
And Kwame actually made some pretty good money in his career, too.
Well, that's why I always tell people when they say Kwame Brown should have never come out early. Yeah, he should have, because he never would have made the money if he would have stayed for 4 years or 3 years in college and they found out he was a fraud.
Yeah.
he got paid boatloads of money he never would have made.
That's a good point. Phillip from the Woodlands, Amin Thompson equals Rajon Rondo. That's his ceiling. What do you think of that comp?
I think he – look, from the standpoint, Rondo was a hell of a defender, a great passer. Not much in terms of free throw shooting and offensive prowess shooting the basketball. I think from a defensive perspective, he brings so much more because of his length and his size and his ability to do things like rebounds and offensive rebounds and things like that. If you turn out to be Rajon Rondo, is that bad?
No.
But I think he can be better.
Yeah, I would sign up for a Rondo career right now if you gave me the option. But like you said, he's longer. I think he's going to be a better rebounder and maybe even a bit of a better finisher. Now, he might not turn into the shooter that Rondo eventually got to.
Right.
7-1, but I like that comp. I think it's a fine comp. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. Speaking of money, how much money is Kyle Tucker going to get? I have a name of a contract that I think is going to be similar to what Kyle Tucker is going to ultimately get. And I don't think it's going to be a good thing to hear. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Pro Dunk's always a good thing to hear, though, and it's a great thing to have. It's one thing to hear it. It's another thing to have it, and you want to have it. Your kids want to have it. You want to have it. They make the highest quality basketball goals you'll find. Tempered glass backboard. Breakaway rim, stainless steel hardware. It's height adjustable, anywhere from 5 feet to 10 feet. A lot of school districts are done with school this week. You want to get the kids out of the house. That way they're not behind the monitors, the screens, the tablets. Get a goal from ProDunk. Send them outside in the morning. Say you can't come back in until the sun goes down. You know you want that peace and quiet. So get a goal from ProDunk. Get the new one, Thor, where you can raise and lower their goals with a drill. Lightning adjust feature. It's easy to do. It's fun to do. 5 to 10 feet in a matter of seconds. And their accessories are next level. Doesn't stop there. LED light kits for night play. Look, it gets hot. We understand it gets hot in Houston. Get LED light kits. That way they can play at night when it cools down a little bit. Backstop nets. You don't want to chase the basketball all around. Pull pad lettering. Lots more. And you can order everything, including professional installation online. You're not great with a level. You're not great with a ladder. You don't have to be. The pros at ProDunk are, and they're going to install your goal at the perfect height, perfectly straight. You don't lift a finger. Let the pros at ProDunk do all of the work for you. Give them a call right now, 281-351-9822. Visit ProDunk.com. Keep the kids outside in the summer with a goal from ProDunk. ProDunk.com.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
The American singer and songwriter John Pardee is coming to Houston for his Mr. Saturday Night Tour. Caller number 5 right now to 713-780-3776 wins a pair of tickets to see country music star John Pardee at Cynthia Woods Mitchell Pavilion, presented by Huntsman on Friday, October 11th. Tickets go on sale May 24th at LiveNation.com. Bees broadcasting live from Highway Cantina in Edo. They gave us some taquitos. They're fantastic. Great spot for food. Great spot for drink. Kyle Tucker is going to be a free agent, not this year, but next year. The Astros have him for this year, next year as well. Then he becomes a free agent. How much money are we thinking Kyle Tucker is going to get? 713-780-3776. How much money is Tucker going to get?
$300 million.
I think it might be light.
What's he going to be when he hits free agency?
He's currently 27, so he'll be 28 next year. He'll be 29 years old. His first year under his new contract will be 29.
He'll be hunting 8 years and 300, three and a quarter.
He's going to make tons of money. Like last year, Cody Bellinger, his AAV was $27 million. Cody Bellinger was $27
million. Wow.
And prices are going to go up. Like, it's just, you know, the inflation.
Inflation, right, yeah.
So prices are going to continue to curve up. Like, it's not going to be Shohei Ohtani money. You look at last year's free agent, Shohei Ohtani made $70 million. That's probably going to be the richest contract
ever
in the next 30, 40 years until prices get just super stupid.
And because, or another guy pitches as well as he hits.
Yeah. Like, there is not a player that has been born. There is not a person who has been born right now on this earth that is going to make $700 million and $70 million a year. Now, there is some funny money there with the whole deferred, you know, contract, and then Ipe. How much was he taking of Shohei Ohtani? I don't know. But you look at
Fletcher.
You look at free agents in 2023. The name that I think is going to be comparable. Now, one name to watch is Soto. Soto's done after this year, and Soto's going to be 26 next season. So I think, like, Soto and Tucker might have the same AAV-ish. Like, what do you think the delta is between Soto's AAV and Kyle Tucker's AAV?
For whatever reason, maybe it's the flash and some of those things. I think Soto and playing now in New York and getting a ton more. I think Kyle Tucker's kind of a hidden secret in a lot of ways still in baseball. I don't think people talk about him nearly enough, and I don't think he gets the exposure he deserves based on where he is right now. I think Soto's going to get more. I think Soto, because he's in New York, is going to get overpaid because they overpay everybody grossly. And if they can't, then they trade for guys that already were overpaid grossly elsewhere. I think that – I think Soto's going to be 40, 45-ish.
Okay. See, I think Kyle Tucker's going to be within $5 million a year of Juan
Soto.
You
think Kyle Tucker's going to get 40 a year?
Yeah. It's only a two-year difference in age. Tucker's been as good a player as Juan Soto has this year, and maybe even like the last two or three years. I'm not, you know, diminishing Juan Soto's contract. I think Soto's going to be younger. Like, I think Soto's going to get a longer deal, but I'm talking strictly AAV, and I do think that Soto's going to make more money per year, but I think it's going to be within $5 million per year between his contract and Juan Soto's contract. The name that I have in mind when it comes to the contract for Kyle Tucker is actually Aaron Judge. I think he's going to get near Aaron Judge money. And then, now, your argument where, you know, New York, they overpay for their guys, et cetera, and Judge had a big year. Judge got 360 for nine, and he did it at the age of 31 years old. Kyle Tucker is going to be 2 years younger than Aaron Judge. His numbers are going to be comparable to the numbers that Aaron Judge produced whenever he was a free agent two off seasons ago. I think Kyle Tucker is going to be around $40 million, and I think he's going to be around 7 to 9 years. I think that his contract, Tucker, and Aaron Judge's contract is going to be pretty comparable when it's all said and done.
It'll be interesting because I don't see Kyle Tucker consistently putting up the power numbers that Aaron Judge, I think Aaron Judge will still put up. But I think that, again, and I think the New York market plays into that, too. And look.
But all GMs know good players. Now, are they going to overpay to keep their own? I think that's 100% fair.
That's where
like
I'm
if
going.
Soto stayed in San Diego and never went to the Yankees, they might not have to pay the keep our own player tax. They probably did have to pay with Judge.
Yeah, but I think it's
But San
different.
Francisco is also in the ballpark on Judge.
I think that San Diego was willing to not let him walk for nothing, but I don't think San Diego had any, and they showed it. They didn't have any aspirations of paying him long term. Whereas the Yankees don't like to let their big time guys leave.
But I mean, San Fran was there. San Fran was there.
For Judge, yes, they were. But again, the Yankees didn't let him leave, and he wanted to stay there. I think the one thing in the case of Tucker is it going to be money over everything else? Because I think that Tucker's not a guy that really fits the dynamic, and I don't think, just from my own personal observation, I don't think he wants to be in a big city like New York where the scrutiny is nonstop all the time, everywhere you do anything. I think he kind of likes the fact that he can fade into anonymity a little bit more, not that he's completely unknown in Houston or in markets like that. But I, look, ability-wise, with what he's putting on the table, someone is going to grossly overpay him.
The Google tells me that the Giants offered Aaron Judge around $360 million, which is ultimately what he got, $360 for nine. There was some thought, I think, too, that Aaron he gave the Yankees a chance to match the contract from San Francisco.
There.
So, like, if the Giants were willing to pay him $360 million, that doesn't mean that the Yankees, like, went crazy, or around $360. It doesn't mean the Yankees went, like, stupid over what the other contract was going to be. And Aaron Judge did have a career year. The year that he entered free agency, that was, what, 2 years ago? It was the year that he led the league in home runs. He hit 62 that year, which was the National League record, 131 ribbies. He hit 37 last year, and 37 he was injured. Now, he wasn't a free agent that year. But if Kyle Tucker puts up the numbers that he's on pace to do, he's on pace to be the first ever player with over 50 home runs and 25 stolen bases in the history of baseball. If Tucker leads the league in home runs, Tucker leads the league in OPS, and he stacks that next year with a very similar year. Like, let's assume that Tucker, even if he's below his paces, let's say he gets up with 45 home runs. Let's say he's top three in OPS. He plays a solid defense. He steals 25 bags. Let's say he then replicates that again next year. 45 home runs, top three OPS, steals you 25 bags. I think it's Aaron Judge territory.
Yeah, at that point, and especially in a contract year, if he does it back-to-back seasons like that, then you show the consistency of being able to do it in multiple seasons. There's someone, like I said, there's someone that's going to pay him. I don't think it's going to be the Astros. I don't think the Astros are going to come close. I think they're going to completely either just act like that they're in it and they're not, or they're going to be competitive to a certain point and then pull out. But I think that someone will grossly overpay Kyle Tucker. And I say overpay just because the salaries are so exorbitant and because of the years. But it's not that he doesn't deserve it if he can continue to do what you said. If he can put if he can stack and rack seasons like that, then he deserves it.
Yeah, he'll be a year younger than Judge, too, like however much that factors in. Let's say it's $350 for nine. $350 for nine is $39 million a year. Like, do you? I don't see the Astros coming anywhere near.
The nine bothers the Astros more than it bothers me, but I still think
it
at that point,
me.
Yeah, at that point, I think nine is way too much for a guy that's going to be in his late 30s, because we always talk about returning on investment, and I don't think, no matter if he's Aaron Judge or just Kyle Tucker-esque, that he's going to have power numbers like that in his late 30s.
Would you do that deal for Kyle Tucker? $350 for 9 years.
I don't think I would.
$350 for nine. Because everybody, this is what happens whenever the Astros have a free agent. We saw this with Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa has a big year. Hashtag pay the man. Hashtag pay the man. I saw it nonstop on my Twitter timeline yesterday. Pay the man. Pay the man. Pay the man. Okay, well, let's talk figures. Like, let's see what that looks like. If Aaron Judge, and look, I'll concede that Aaron Judge, the year that he was coming off of was better than, you know, maybe Kyle Tucker produces in the next 2 years. But I don't think it's head and shoulders above. He had him in home runs. I think Tucker's going to be right up there with, like, OPS and top 3-5 in home runs. And then he would have done it for back-to-back years. Not that Aaron Judge was a one-hit wonder. Not that he was, like, this one-year wonder. But the year prior to that, he hit 39. Like, he went from 39 to 62 in a contract year and got, you know, paid by the Yankees.
Is it fair to say that Tucker's a better for average hitter?
Judge? I would say that, yeah.
Yeah, I would say he's a
Judge's
better.
Judge's career 281. Tucker's career 274.
I still think at this point in their careers, I would trust Tucker to be a better hit for average than I would Judge, but I think Judge I would trust him to have better power numbers over the next couple of years.
Okay, so hashtag pay the man. 713-780-ESPN. Would you hashtag pay the man $380 million over 9 years? Would you hashtag do that? Or 350 over nine. Would you hashtag pay him 350 over nine? 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line. It's the Killer Bees live from Highway Cantina on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, let me take a minute right now to tell you about Vanderford Air. Vanderford Air is the number that you need to lock in your phone right now, because if you've been outside in the last 2 days, and we were outside at the golf tournament yesterday, and we can tell you it was hot. There was humidity. You are going to sweat. Well, it's nice to know that when you get to your house, the air conditioning's working. Until it doesn't. And then you have all kinds of problems. Then you go into panic mode, and you don't know who to call, who to trust, who's going to give you the guarantees that you're looking for. That's why you go to Vanderford Air. That's why you have this number locked into your phone already, because it's going to be the one that you need, because they're going to take care of you every step of the way. 281-557-COOL. It's easy to remember. Put it in your phone. Because, one, you should probably have your system checked now so that you're ahead of the game. If it needs any kind of tune-up or a part or anything like that, get it done before we hit triple digits. We already know it's been hot. not. It's going to be for the foreseeable future. But then if something goes wrong and you call them and you call that number, within 24 hours of you calling them, they're going to be at your door and they're going to be working on it. That's what you need. Not, we'll get to you next week. Hey, we're backloaded. It might be a little while. No, you don't want to do that because you don't want to sit there in your own sweat for day after day in the heat in your own house. You want it taken care of. And the other thing that's great about Vandenberg Air, everything's guaranteed 100% of your money back. That's what I love, too. Because once they do the work, the parts, the new systems, the labor, everything they're going to do and how it's going to perform is 100% satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. That's what you want in a company when you're looking for services to be done that are as important as heating, air conditioning, HVAC units, plumbing, new piping, all the different things that concern your house and your comfort. You need to make sure you get guarantees along with people you can trust. That's why I tell you, check out VandenbergAir.com or call them and save the number, 281-557-COOL.
ESPN 97.5.
I assume you knew.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you are sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.